I'm going to inject a cautionary note here because we're about to open the lines for Glenn. And as you all know, I've experienced a recent tragedy in my life, and I'm going to ask that you not give me condolence for that, and accept that you certainly have given me condolence for that. Thousands, 11,000 emails and all the rest of it. So thank you very much. Again, this is sort of my escape from thinking of things like that. And so if you would refrain from doing that on the air, you would be a very good person. Now, Glenn, welcome back. What do you expect from the audience? You know, when you're going to get anything at all, what do you think you're going to get? You think you're going to get a lot of negativity and skepticism or agreement?
Well, I've been doing this quite a long time, and actually the question and answer session is one of the highlights because it gives a chance to interact with people, and people have many different points of view and very different points of experiences, and so I don't take anything as a positive or as a negative. I try to answer the best I can. If I don't know, I don't invent answers. There is no such thing as an expert in this field,
mm-hmm.
so that's constantly evolving. I can only relate to the information and the experiences and materials.
All right. Well, in a moment, you'll have a chance to do exactly that. I am not an astronomer, so I can't answer this question, but maybe Glenn can. And Glenn, what I'm curious about is Earth-based telescopes. Now, I understand that our government could conceivably control, for example, what man saw while he was on the moon. Our government could conceivably certainly control what our probes and satellites have shown, because that's their territory. But, you know, there's a lot of telescopes, Earth-based telescopes, at universities and learning centers and observatories around the world. And what I'm asking you is, some of them are very powerful. Are they powerful enough to see things on the moon, which is relatively close, that would give up the ball game?
I believe absolutely so. I mean, on good seeing conditions with a 12.5-inch reflector or a machine that's even a little bit larger, or depending on the model of refractor that you have, watching the moon and recording it, I have a very good friend in Phoenix, a gentleman by the name of Alan. He was a witness to one of these UFOs touching down on the Adamski property, and he may be one of your callers. But he has a very sophisticated telescope system that's hooked up through video, through the television, and he watches and photographs it quite diligently, and he has some extremely interesting photographs.
Well, if guys with 12-inch telescopes that can do it, then what about the University of Hawaii, where they have a telescope that'll knock your socks right off? I mean, it would eat that 12-incher and not even burp.
Actually, I was a guest in Maui up there to the Air Force Observatory many years ago, and I had to obtain security and DOD clearance for that, and you would be amazed at the photographs they have.
Oh, would I now? But see, this is a private institution, more or less, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what motive would they have for cooperating with our government in keeping this secret?
Who provides the funding not only to maintain, to construct, and also the funding as far as who gets access to the use of the equipment and for how long? This is, usually the controlling agencies that take care of these instruments.
All right, here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hello.
Hi, how you doing? I'm hooked on the show already.
Where are you, sir? Where are you?
Chicago, Illinois.
Chicago, okay, good.
Chicago.
Do you have a question?
Question for Glenn. It's really a two-part question. One is it... what's the possibility of extraterrestrial creatures living amongst us on Earth, going about our day-to-day lives, living amongst them, or them living amongst us? And the second part of the question would be, if you've seen the footage of the flying humanoids, and your thoughts on that.
Flying humanoids? Is that what you said?
Correct. In South America, the flying humanoids?
Okay. All right. Glenn?
Well, the two parts of the question, the first part being the possibility of them living amongst us, has been discussed, that they are human beings that come from other planets, that come and live and work amongst us for a period of time, sort of like a Peace Corps service. And there's a number of them that help us in specific fields and give us directions in order to overcome certain obstacles. And that's a very real concept. In fact, one that the scientists at NASA at Goddard questioned my father and mother exclusively on. The second part of that is whether I've seen pictures or representations of flying humanoids. No, I haven't, although there is technical devices which help towards the what we consider to be levitation or what they consider to be pro-gravity. So technologically a device in which allows you to float without wings or use of an airplane or whatever is certain a possibility.
Let's go back to number one. You believe, pinning you to the wall here, that there are extraterrestrials living among us. Do you believe that?
I believe that they circulate amongst us, absolutely.
Is there a way to differentiate, to recognize an extraterrestrial in our population?
Yes, there is.
And that would be?
I would never divulge such an idea, and I would certainly not place them in jeopardy.
Oh, come on.
Well, let's think about it. Think how nice people we are. The first thing we would do is go grab them, dissect them, torture them, put them in jail. I mean, I wouldn't do that.
And so you know the answer to this question. You know how to recognize these, I don't want to say people, but those among us who are not us. You know how to recognize. You actually know how to recognize them.
I would say people because they don't look any different than you and I. Absolutely.
Well, then how do we differentiate? There is a way.
Oh, there is a way to differentiate that.
But you're not telling.
No, I would never do that. I think that that would be irresponsible.
Okay. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hi. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, you're on. This is
I'm
it.
On?
Yes.
Glenn. This is Al, Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, Al, good to talk to you.
Hi. Just a comment for your listening audience. I have a 10-inch telescope with an Astrovid video camera on the eyepiece.
Are you the guy that...
The signal goes to a 27-inch television screen. I invite the neighbors over to watch the moon show.
Is this who you were expecting, Glenn? Excuse
me. Correct.
Okay, all right. Yep. So you're the guy.
Okay, and I
what do you see?
I also videotape what goes on up there.
Understood.
Well, I saw one craft that did a 180-degree turn without ever changing speed. I have seen craft brightly lit with a very dark shadow going right up the terminator of the moon and then doing a 90-degree turn into the sunlit portion. Again, without changing speed. If people have a scope like this and are patient and watch it on a video, you will see formation flying. These are not Earth satellites.
Okay, so you have videotapes of all this. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have some videotapes of a lot of that. I do with 180-degree one small one shooting across the moon.
What have you done with this video?
Well, I show it to my friends. And I let them have
a copy. Can I be your friend? In other words, I really would like to see what you've captured.
Would you prefer VHS or DVD?
Oh, well, now...
I can send you a DVD, and then that way...
What a nice choice. DVD, I think.
Okay. I can do that.
Can you really?
Yeah, does Glenn have your address?
Well, you can get it, Al, directly from online. I'd like to remind our listeners that Al is an extremely competent person. He was one of the people in Korea during the military service who witnessed these UFOs in 1950. It's recorded in Captain Rubel's book on the report of unidentified flying saucers. He also witnessed one of them along with several dozen other people landing on the Adamski property momentarily before taking off again. He is a retired aerospace worker with a DOD clearance who has worked on such things as resonance fields and many other different things. So this gentleman knows what he's talking about.
Space suit there.
You guys are really buddies, aren't you? Yeah, you're really buddies, aren't you? You know each other quite well, apparently.
We met several years ago.
I'm 75 years old and an acoustic and vibration engineer specialist. And I've seen so many flying saucers that I was moved to visit George Adamski. And all I can say is, wow, what a nice guy. What a personable person and honest. He had a 15-inch dome for his 15-inch telescope in his backyard, and I was using his 6-inch telescope that he took the pictures of the flying saucers with. He also offered me his camera, which I didn't use. But one night I saw a blue flash go over behind the dome where the 15-inch scope was, lit up, and there was a flying saucer sitting on the ground. So I headed for it. People from the restaurant, two men and two women, started screaming, there's a flying saucer on the ground.
Yeah.
And one guy came up and almost knocked me down, and he said, there's a UFO on the ground. I said, yes, if you'll please get out of the way, I'll go over and say hello to these folks. There was no fear at that time. So he kind of disappeared. The ship got bright. You could hear it hum. Then the hum disappeared to a higher frequency. It rose straight up until it looked like a star, and then shot due west right over San Diego at a very rapid speed. You know, flicker fusion of the eyes took place.
Well, you sound very
incredible. I went inside,
incredible.
And I talked to George Adamski about what had happened, and he just looked at me and smiled and almost laughed. He says, well, I was just wondering what all that commotion was outside, and he just kept smiling at me.
I see. So, well, all right, I bite. I want a copy of your video.
Okay.
I will. I'll see to it that that you get an address. All right. Email me. I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com. Just send me an email with yourself in the heading, your name or whatever.
Okay.
And we'll rock on from there. All right.
All right.
Then, do you give permission for what you send to be shared?
As far as I'm concerned, you can share it with anyone you want.
Good enough. Thank you very much for the call. Take care. I'll look forward to it, and I'll share it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hello.
Hello, Art, and hello, Glenn.
Hello.
I got a question for you, Glenn.
Yes.
Your very first picture that you posted of that very clear shot of the moon, that crisp one with the two large craters on it.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever blown those craters up on that picture?
Yes, we have taken close-ups of a number of the high-quality shots, and those are depicted in the book as well, and I show them when I go out on the road on invitation. I did a lecture here for MUFON in San Diego, and I may be over in Laughlin at the UFO convention and at the end of next month as well. So, yes, we do increase the size of the image when we find things of interest, because sometimes the pictures are big and they're hard to see.
Okay, I'm seeing on mine blowing up one, structures built within those two large craters. Now, is that what you've seen as well?
I don't know. How far did you go in, ma'am? You're not looking at pixelization, are you?
Yes, but I have a real fine quality. You can tell, because you can tell the shadow casting and everything is still there.
I can't tell you off that picture offhand. If you go ahead and examine the pictures, and I've encouraged everyone, and my father encouraged everyone to do the same. That's why he supplied everyone with the serial numbers so that they could order the pictures themselves and go about the investigative process and show their friends, and that way we continue to keep this ball rolling. So if you see that, I have no doubt that there's a lot more information on these pictures to be seen.
Well, I looked at the two large craters, so then I went to a smaller crater where I do have good photo equipment on the computer. Mm. Maybe nothing else, but that photo equipment is there. And in the smaller craters, it looks like 17 years in the Air Force tells me it's almost like a silo on a couple of them.
Now, that I don't know. There have been reports of constructions in Greater Kasendi Crater with the Mount Wilson Observatory. They reported over a period of years that they saw construction, tubes leading from the bottom of the crater, going through the rim, out the other side. They would appear, and then the next year they would see them taken apart again.
Hmm.
And and that was documented. And then there's an area where a group of scientists say that they see an increased accumulation of domes. And so I think that the moon has a great deal of activity. I also feel that a certain amount of it has moved to the backside of the moon because in recent years we have experimented with high-tech lasers and resonant field weapons and shot it at the moon. And so, you know, that discourages them a little bit. They move to the other side where it's a little
Speaking
safe.
Of discouraging them, Glenn, there are a number of people, Stephen Greer being one of them, who would tell you that we have shot at UFOs.
Absolutely.
And advising that he thinks it's poor form on the part of Earth to be shooting at these people who can go great distances. I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, that's just the case. And if you look at both Major Kehoe's book, Aliens from Space, and Frank Edwards' book, Flying Saucer Serious Business, there are several circumstances where we have scrambled jets and fired at them, also from naval vessels and fired at them. And through this entire sequence of time, of many years of, shall we say, unwarranted aggression, they have never returned the aggression, and certainly they have both the power and the ability to completely flatten whatever they wish. So this once again brings into question how aggressive are they versus aggressive we are.
Well, I don't know. When you shoot at something, you're sending a strong message.
Absolutely.
A very strong message. And so you would discourage any further such behavior on our part.
Well, I think that we have enough information and we have enough knowledge that that we have no reason not to wish to interact in a more reasonable manner.
I take it you've seen some of the STS footage of
Yes.
apparently UFOs being shot at and evading?
Yes. Absolutely.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hello.
Hello. If I sound negative, it's not because I'm negative about the UFO question.
We can be any way you want.
Yeah, sure. Well, the point I'd like to raise is you have no doubt at all that the NASA's story about our missions to the moon are accurate.
Ah. In other words, that we even ever went to the moon, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm a photographer. And those, I'd stake my life that a lot of those pictures were taken in a studio under artificial light.
All right. What about that? I mean, that's a pretty good topic, Glenn. There's a big group of people out there, a big group, who think we never went to the moon, and they've got all kinds of evidence they'll cite.
Well, absolutely. I'm familiar with that as well. And then I'm going to have to say, let's look at the other side of the equation. When we look at photographs and motion picture footage of the lunar orbiter flying over the lunar surface,
yes,
with a limb down on the ground. In fact, you were able with a telescope to watch the limb land on the moon and also when it came back out. So obviously, if you're pointed at the moon and you see the limb take off, that's rather, it takes it out of the realm of studio.
Well, maybe.
When you're watching on through your own telescope, well, let's take it a step further then. Let's take it a step further, and when you see Earth rise over the lunar surface, and
yes,
you see the Earth come up over the lunar surface.
Very impressive.
You have to have some basis and foundation in order to have that picture. If you had never gone there, you would have never any idea what the perspective of Earthrise looks like.
Once again, Glenn Steckling. Glenn, your book is Alien Bases on the Moon 2, correct?
That's correct.
Continuing the work of your father.
That's correct.
Is that book now available Amazon, for example, .com?
Absolutely, or they can order it directly from us on the website on the materials page, which the link is available that you've already put on there.
And you ever autograph any copies?
Absolutely. If people like to have that, certainly. I'm more than happy to do that. Just include your name and what you want in there, and I would love to do that.
Ooh. People love that.
Yes.
They absolutely love that. So they can get autograph copies. So to do that, where do they have to go?
They'd have to order it directly from us because I don't think Amazon would forward it. So they could go to the website and order it from GAF International here in Vista, California.
Cool. All right. Wanted to get that in. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. Do you think that the Earth is like a quarantined planet?
Ha-ha. And a good question it is. Yes, Glenn, what about it? Are we like Australia was?
Well, Australia is a pretty nice place. I've visited many times.
Well, it's okay now, but I mean, you know, crude beginnings.
I think that plenty of UFO activity comes and continues to come all the time. In fact, last year over Mexico, their interceptors photographed a whole armada of them as they were chasing them.
His question was, are we quarantined?
That's right. So if we're quarantined, they can come here, and obviously we send out our probes into space. I think that as long as we don't go out into space with aggression and the desire to conquer, then I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be allowed to continue to go to space, and we seem to be doing so with our probes.
Well, we do. We had a disproportionate number of Martian probes that met with bad endings.
That's true.
Now, recently, we've had some more success, but, you know, there were some instances, as you're aware. And his question concerned quarantine. So you don't think we're quarantined?
I don't believe we're quarantined. I believe that if there's any restriction going on, it's self-inflicted.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Rich from Phoenix.
Hey,
Rich. Fantastic show tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, Glenn, I got a couple questions for you. The first one about Mars, especially about what do you think about life on Mars, the Sphinx, and the knockouts of some of our probes on Mars, like you just mentioned a moment ago, and also about any special UFO sightings maybe over the Peoria, Arizona.
All right, well, let's hold it right there. That's a tall order already. Glenn, you've concentrated on the moon.
Yeah.
On your father's work. But there are, of course, as you're well aware, many questions about Mars, the face on Mars, and a whole lot more on Mars. Some photographs that are just absolutely rock you back startling from Mars. So stretch out a little and comment on Mars.
All righty. Well, that's not difficult. As we know, over a period of time, we are peeling away the old thoughts and concept about Mars as we did with the moon. Before we said, well, it didn't have an atmosphere. Obviously, it does. It has dust storms. It has aurora. Just 2 weeks ago, scientists were baffled about aurora borealis because supposedly that's not supposed to be able to happen. We're talking about water. We're talking about warmer temperatures. And so, consequently, little by little, the picture grows into a much more representable place. Of course, the pictures when we're talking about the plains of Sedona, and the work of Poulter and Molinari and Richard Hoagland and things like that, these pictures are quite dynamic. And I believe personally that it shows conclusive evidence of construction on Mars. And whether or not the probes have been knocked out or whether they have been failures or they may have been neither or both and the probes are working just fine, we're just not told about it. There's a number of possibilities.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning. Hello.
Hello.
Extinguish your radio, please.
This is Calvin calling from Georgia.
Yes.
I have a question about the moon.
Yes.
Everybody says I'm crazy, but they say the dark side of the moon there doesn't exist. I always thought that it doesn't rotate around Earth, and you never see the other side. Is
Glenn?
That true?
As far as I understand, the moon rotates, but not in relationship to the Earth. It's in a fixed position, and it turns as we turn around the sun, but in itself it doesn't spin. And no, so there are certain times, of course, when this entire unit of both the Earth and the Moon are pointed at the Sun, so the backside is lit. And then as it continues the Earth orbit around the Sun, then it shifts around. And so, but the Moon itself is a relative sphere, and both sides have been photographed.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I was wondering exactly, you know, when they're taking these pictures of the moon and whatnot, are they doing polar orbiting shots or like equatorial?
I can't tell you exactly on that. From the photos that I've seen, if I believe correctly here, any type of orbit is like a sine wave. It is not a straight line,
mm-hmm.
And a sine wave, as you look from an orbit of Earth as well, goes from equatorial up and then back down over both hemispheres. So I believe it. It's the same for the moon as well, based on its gravitational field.
So, like, I mean, but approximately about how much of a swath would they have, you know, in order to?
Well, they can vary the you know, like with the Clementine that they sent up there, they have taken it and put it in different sections. So as they radar map and photo map the topography, then they do that in sweeps. And with each adjustment of orbit, they're able to cover the entire circumference.
By the way, Glenn, just so there's no mistake about it, I, too, believe quite firmly that we went to the moon. However, there's a large body of people out there that don't believe we went to the moon, and they can make, if you listen to them, a fairly compelling case. In other words, they can cite quite a bit of evidence that worries you.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I mention that is because you are presenting some fairly compelling evidence regarding anomalies on the moon.
Yes.
And so you can make the same kind of case that they can, really, but not go any further.
Well, I like to think that the body of evidence, when you look at the photographs and you look at the 20x15s and you look at the microfilm and the microfiche, and you also look at the motion picture footage of you know, the lunar orbiter and the LEM and the topography and the changes that happen, you know, when you look at that body of evidence, it moves it from the point of supposition or argumentative to a different level entirely. So everybody has to stand responsibly for what they represent, and I would hope that the people who wish to further that concept can produce the body of evidence that would help them do that. I'm inclined differently in that particular matter.
I understand. International Line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning.
Good morning, Art, and hi, Glenn. This is Carl from Ontario.
Yes, sir.
I'm just curious about the possibility that soon this question may be answered simply by the private, and this is just one question, then I have a quick one following, if I could, but soon we're going to have, as we do now, privateers that are sending satellites up. They may not be orbiting the moon yet or doing this type of investigation, but soon they might. Private organizations,
yeah,
that are sending up their satellites that might be able to kind of answer this question a little more definitively. Is that correct?
Well, we have multi-level corporations that are sending their satellites into space. To what I understand at this point, the construction of these particular vehicles is still done by the corporations such as TRW and the other ones for the Defense Department. And so they construct it, and then the corporations are buying space on the vehicles, whether it happens to be Arianes rockets or anything else, in order to launch it into orbit.
I'm really talking about the guys that are shooting up satellites and taking pictures of Area 51, and the DOD wouldn't be really happy about that or backing that move.
Well, no, I agree with that. They wouldn't be too pleased with that. So it depends on what type of equipment is being launched and what type of equipment is being carried on those launches to see what they can take pictures of and what they can see.
All right, Glenn, do you believe that we have alien technology at Area 51 or some Area 51 somewhere that we have captured and possess alien technology?
I think that the Roswell incident is a reality, no matter how much it wished to be spinned. There's a certain amount of wreckage and technology that has been obtained over a period of time,
okay,
and how we have deciphered it and developed it has also produced, I would say, a large percentage of our own research and development craft that are flying about and being witnessed as well. And I've heard as numbers as high as about 50% of sightings these days can be attributed to these type of crafts.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning.
Yeah, is that me?
That's you.
Yeah, I'm the same person I called earlier, I guess.
No. You're only allowed to call once. That's a hard and fast rule. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Ed from Lansing, Michigan. I have a question for Glenn.
Hi, Ed.
Earlier you commented that you would know how to tell the difference between a visitor to this planet and us.
No, he said he would know how to tell. He just wouldn't tell us.
Right. I'm wondering if he's ever contemplating or has ever had an intellectual conversation with a visitor to our planet.
Very good question. Glenn?
Let's put it this way. I've had personal experiences. My family has. We did so with Mr. Adamski, and since that time, certain contacts he introduced us to that we have had the privilege of seeing occasionally. This is nothing that we control or anyone else but them. And these individuals I've had an opportunity to see on several occasions.
So that was a yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can take that as you wish. But I believe personal experiences are just that, personal.
Sure.
I get that. All right. Thank you very much. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a quick question as far as disclosure goes. From my understanding, other governments in other countries have full disclosure. And how would someone here on the United States side get a hold of some of that governmental information from other countries?
There, in fact, are governments that have claimed that they are opening up and giving everything they have. A lot of that lately, in fact, Glenn.
Yes, that's true. And whether it's full disclosure, well, that depends on who you talk to, because there's always a certain amount of information that is kept and released at intervals. There have been some times where the Russia and so former Soviet Union has released a great deal of information, some in South America. I don't believe that full disclosure is going to happen, because sometimes there is a lot of influence exerted, sometimes based on, shall we say, monies that are given from one country to the next for foreign aid and purchase of military hardware and things like that. So some countries have talked more, and some that are less influenced by the powers that be, so to speak, which is usually this country, and some of them who don't speak too much at all, because we're very closely aligned on many issues.
There you are.
Okay, my question was, how would we get a hold of that type of information here in the United States?
The best thing to do then is to contact a person in that particular country. Sometimes you can go online and you can find representatives of certain groups or associations in those countries, and then you can ask them directly, because they know the means and procedures of obtaining that information, very much like when we apply through the Freedoms of Information Act as well. So each country is specifically different.
But isn't all of this really rather easily dealt with by those who aren't ready for all of this to come out yet?
If they don't want to give it to you, they won't give it to you. Or, for instance...
I'm saying, even if you get it from some country, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the Holy Grail, that suddenly everybody buys it all. We don't get anything that hard. We have countries that open up. France did some interesting things. South American countries are doing some interesting things. Mexico is.
Yeah.
Quite a few countries are opening up. But isn't that rather easily handled by those who don't want it believed?
It can be, yes, because it's easily twisted. I give you a brief example here. There was a report that came out of Russia in 1989. In fact, my father sat with the scientists that were involved, and this had to do with one of these craft landing, and the people, and I stress this, in this circumstance, they were humanoid, people like you and I, that came out. And TASS released an article on it, and TASS was the official agency. At that particular time, everything was heavily screened and looked at.
Oh, yes.
And it talked very expressly and very specifically what happened. 2 days later, 48 hours later, the same report came out in Western European press, and now they were no longer humanoid-looking. They were 10 feet tall with three arms. By the time the same report got to this country, the report had been fabricated around again, so it made the whole story look not believable.
Well, there you have it. You've exactly answered my question. Isn't it easily handled? And you just showed us how easily handled it really is.
That's how easily it's handled.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Glenn Steckling. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's an honor to speak with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Concerning the possibility of alien beings actually existing, do you not suppose that if they are indeed intelligent enough to travel to this planet from wherever they come,
mm-hmm.
and having observed us for several decades at least,
mm-hmm.
That in their wisdom, realizing that we are unable to cohabitate with one another simply because we have wars all the time over just trivial things.
We're running out of time. Are you okay. suggesting that they might conclude they should crush us like a bug?
Actually, my conclusion is that they probably realize that they would do more harm than good if they were to avail themselves.
Well, let's address this quickly here.
Okay.
Just because they look at the situation and they see a bit of mayhem, a bit of confusion and misunderstanding, they are extremely cognizant of the many forms of our expression. And it's not any different than if we go to a different country and we see different customs and different ways of thinking. And if things are not looking too good there, do we just cut and run and abandon? No, we don't, and we have not done so historically as well. And so I would venture to say that they consider us to be their brothers and sisters, just a little bit in need of a bit of enlightenment and a bit of education. And then how could you turn away from that type of need if you had that humanity within you?
You're certainly looking at us very optimistically, aren't you?
Well, I would say that we deserve that optimism if we wish to participate in it. It's very simple. We don't need to kill each other. We don't need to blow each other up. We don't need to so easily subscribe to this finalistic, defeatist kind of attitude.
Well, right. But, I mean, you get there by looking at our actions forever. I mean, we've been at war forever. Likely will be at war forever. So, listen, we could have a blast here. We could keep going, but we can't. We're out of time. Glenn Steckling, your book is Alien Bases on the Moon 2, and I recommend people, if they want to know more, go get your book. So, buddy, thank you for being here.
All right, a pleasure to be with you. I look forward to do it again sometime.
Take care.